having other people say that something that I said made an impact on them, or that they were going to do something different tomorrow in their job because of what I said, because I had experienced that so many times myself. And so to think that I could be on the other side of that was a really incredible moment, and I'll never forget that feeling.
My name is Noah Omri Levin, and you're listening to Digital Marketing Life, my podcast giving you access to the real life experiences, challenges, and triumphs of the incredible people across our industry. This may be my favorite episode yet. It's a new year, and we often talk about giving back at the end of the year. But our hope here was to give some inspiration for all of you to find ways to start giving back now. So without further ado, today I am joined by Valerie Kroll, the president of the board of directors at the Digital Analytics Association. She is a highly experienced analytics and optimization expert who has a big heart and a passion for building up people around her. We explore the idea of giving back, the benefits of being a person who gives back, and many of the forms that it can take. No matter your years of experience, there is something for all of us to take from this one. Enjoy. Welcome, Valerie, to Digital Marketing Life.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. So to start off today's episode, what I would love to do, because our theme of today is giving back, is hear your giving back bio. So if you could tell our listeners just a little bit about what points in your career, before your career and during your career now, that you found opportunities to give back to the industry, to the community, and what that looked like for you up until today.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So when I was thinking about the giving back for preparing for this episode, my first example that I could think of was back to when I was like 5 or 6 years old, around Christmas time. My mom and I baked an incredible amount. I think it was like 50 batches of chocolate chip cookies to send to the troops, because this is like during Desert Storm. So my mom was really big into volunteerism and giving back. And so it was actually a pretty big theme throughout my childhood. And then as I grew up, some of my personal interests were around swimming and dancing. I was actually a swim instructor for some inclusion programs for children with physical or mental disabilities, and also an assistant dance instructor for some inclusion programs as well. Those things really started to like bring me joy personally, just because it was a tie between something that I was personally interested in and helping someone else find joy in that as well. And then as I grew up and started finding other opportunities to give back, I found other ways to kind of create that same connection. And when I first got into digital analytics, I was pretty immediately connected to the community. And when I made the switch from market research to digital analytics, I kind of had a rough start of it. There were some things politically within that organization that made my role controversial before I was even added to the picture. At one point, about four to six months in, I was actually considering leaving the industry, but it was through the community and connections at eMetrics and at Accelerate that I really felt like I found my people, and that some of the issues that I was having internally wasn't novel, that they were challenges that other people had as well. All of a sudden, I couldn't get enough of connecting with this awesome digital analytics community. And there's so many ways that people do give back, whether it's in person at these conferences. There's a lot of people who dedicated an incredible amount of time to producing really high quality blog content. I remember reading like Omniman and Analytics Talk, the Justin Catroni blog, and that was really a great assistant to some of the technical skills that I really needed to ramp up on quickly, because when I first started in digital analytics, I had no idea what JavaScript was. I just started actually on the reporting side. So that was really incredible, which is part of my inspiration for getting more involved in the DAA, because if I could help create and influence the community that had given me so much, that would make me feel incredible. So got in more involved with the Chicago chapter, with planning events and just creating some tweets for social posts for events, and when I moved to New York, I actually became a chapter leader for the New York City chapter. So I was actually coordinating and planning those events and getting more involved in that community. And, you know, honestly, when I first moved to New York, that was actually one of my top priorities. So I was like, where's my digital analytics crew? Like, I got to get my hands on them as quickly as possible. So that's actually how my role now on the board of directors came to be, because of my increased involvement with this community over time to where I am today, currently sitting as president.
Amazing. Wow. Okay. I just want to touch on a couple of points there, because it was really interesting to hear. Number one, growing up, this is something that you did, right? You were involved in and giving back in different ways. And it seemed like that kind of drove finding those opportunities to give back. You kind of already had a taste of what that was. But then you mentioned in giving back swimming and dance that you found opportunities to give back in areas that you were already passionate about. Do you feel like that mattered? Did it matter that you were passionate about those areas and that helped you give back better? Or do you think the giving back really by itself was enough? And whether it was swim or dance or something totally different, it would have made a difference?
Yeah, I think it's probably a bit of both. Going back to the early example of baking the cookies, that was something that my mom felt very personally connected to and passionate about. She's an amazing cook and loves baking. And that's one way that she shows love, is getting to know that other people are really enjoying something that she's poured herself into. And that, you know, brought me a lot of personal joy to know that that was helping other people. But I really found my jam when it was something that I was really passionate about, because I loved swimming and I loved dancing. And so seeing someone else get as excited as me, or to get into a specific example, when you're really trying to get into swimming competitively, there's certain things like that are very technical, I guess you could say, or like hard skills that you need to be able to master in order to get really good. And you can kind of see them as a series of hurdles. So one is being able to dive in from the deck and not lose your goggles, or being able to breathe to both sides, because people are typically able to breathe to the side that they're dominant in, but it's really hard to do the other. And so seeing other people overcome these hurdles and find joy in something that like I was able to master maybe a couple of years earlier, that was what like really special. And it was kind of addicting in a way.
Amazing. I feel like you've hit on something really, really special there. And I feel like it comes in later as well. Now with analytics, you almost decided to kind of move in a different direction. And it was because of the community that you found that you were able to find that, no, this is really where you wanted to be. And now you're excelling in that world, not just the career, but really as a leader in the space. Can you talk a little bit about those early challenges? Because it's an interesting thing. I don't know that everybody from the outside thinking of, you know, jumping into a career in analytics thinks like, oh, I'm going to be in a controversial place, right? But when you're in it, you realize like when you're looking at the data and the data tells the truth of what happened, sometimes you really are put in uncomfortable positions. There is a lot of like a learning curve there to figure out. This isn't just about being really great at math application of technology. It's also a lot about working with people. Can you tell me a little bit about what you've found for yourself from the community, and also the things that you love, like breathing through both sides, but applied to analytics that you love to teach others?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was an in-house market researcher at the American Medical Association, and we would get a lot of projects. So my two clients were actually marketing and IT, and we would get a lot of projects that would line up very closely to what we would call today like usability tests, or figuring out like content mapping. There was a project that came out from jointly from IT and marketing that said, we need to send out an email newsletter that's going to point to our new blog. Can you survey our constituents and figure out what content people are interested in? And I said, sure, absolutely. Like that will be pretty quick turnarounds. Like what's the list that you want me to be surveying from? And when I took a glance at that list, it actually mirrored exactly our header navigation on our corporate website. So we took the survey out and we interviewed our members to figure out what content are you interested in. But I also reached out to some of the IT partners to say, like, I've heard about this thing where you can like track clicks on stuff. And so I would love to be able to take the stated importance of all these priorities for market research and match it up with the actual, like the derived importance of these topics based on the actual interaction with the website. And they're like, yeah, there's this guy, he sits in the basement and churns out these web trends reports. You should reach out to him and also like bring donuts because he doesn't want to talk to people. I'm like, sure, no problem. I got this. So made this connection and all of a sudden had access into web trends. And there was like this whole new world opened up. I was like, what do you mean we can get a report on like top pages across all this content? And all of a sudden it was like this whole new pipeline of information that I could pepper into my reports was available to me. And I got so excited because I felt like it really added a rich layer to what people were saying. Because obviously in market research, a lot of times people want to please the interviewer and say things that they think they should be saying. So, yeah, I'm really interested in policy. But when it actually came down to it, people weren't really coming to us, the AMA, for some of that content as an example. So matching those two things up was really my recommendations of what content to move forward with became a whole lot richer. And so started infusing this more and more for what we were churning out. And the vice president of digital strategy and services, who was in IT, kind of said like, hey, I really like what you're doing here, adding this information layer. Would you want to move over to this side and be like a digital analyst full time? And I was like, I mean, sure, but like, I have no idea like the magic that's behind getting these reports together. Like, I don't know what this witchcraft is like. And he's like, well, let's like take a risk on each other. Like, I'll take a risk on you that you're going to like skill up on this technical side, and you'll take a risk on me that you'll be able to find a way to add value to the organization owning this competency. Because up until then, it had just been kind of seen as like a system admin supporting it from the technical role. So I took the job. I dove in. I really respected him and his team. Jumped in feet first, and that was April 1st, which should have been my first sign, starting on April Fool's Day. And I started to get familiar with like who my clients were in the landscape. And on my third day on the job, I found out that the AMA was launching a new store, their new e-commerce store, where they sold like coding books to different medical professionals. It was launching on the 10th, and they were hoping for a full Google Analytics e-com implementation for launch day. So that basically... 7 days to go from what's a JavaScript to full econ implementation really wasn't set up for success there. So we had to do a lot to figure that out, how I was going to message to my internal clients, like what was possible. And like, while I was trying to ramp up, and all I had done was like sign up for eMetrics and DAA and started watching GAIQ preparation videos. And then on the other side, so I actually had like 8 clients from day one. And on the other side, I actually found out there were some people internally who did have technical expertise with these digital analytics suite of tools that wanted this role, but didn't even get interviewed for the position. And I later come to find out it's because my manager, the VP of Digital Strategy and Services, really wanted someone to focus on the insights and what does this mean for our business, and really thought that the secondary piece was the technical component, because he figured we could always hire someone externally if need be, if I really can't ramp up on these chops. Well, those two people that applied for that job were two of my primary client contacts. So how do you think those meetings went? So I had that challenge. And then like my third one was, there were a lot of people internally who had been in their roles at this nonprofit association for years and never had to think about their content from a performance standpoint. So I would put together an analysis. Everyone was always competing over the homepage, but that wasn't even in the top 5 pages in terms of entry points into our website. And so I wanted other people to think of their content as the front door. So we put together like top 5 front doors of, you know, the AMA website. And I like took it on this tour, and I was so disappointed in the reaction. Like, I would come to these meetings like, hey, guess what? Did you know that your content is one of the number one entry pages on our website? And they're like, sure, but like, what's an entry page? Like, also, why do I care? Because I've been doing this job for 15 years and never had to care about the metrics you're talking about. So like, can you just like delete that file and like, we never talk again? Because I'd prefer to not have accountability. So anyways, I had these challenges of people not like believing in me, in my ability to deliver. I had really like clients that had like these really demanding expectations, I mean, rightfully so, they don't know what goes into it. And then I also had like no really great examples of how to bring this to the organization in a way that was going to like create change. And so I was like, oh my gosh, I'm the worst ever. Like, I can't get people to buy in. You know, I'm having all these really highly contentious meetings. It was really just doubting myself. And then right at the same time, two things were happening. One was a new job kind of opened up. This is like 4 to 6 months in, to do social media analytics for the R&D department at Kraft, which sounded kind of cool. And so I was considering exploring it because I was just so kind of depressed, to be honest, that like I was so excited about this new job and was just falling on my face hard. And then it was like middle of June or end of June was eMetrics. And that was my first time meeting the digital analytics community. And there was like 12 person round tables. And one of the first sessions on the first day that Jim Stern puts together is like, I think they're called like birds of a feather now. So there's these topics. And one of them was like, how do you get organizational buy-in for like what you're doing was the topic. And I was like, I need to sit there. And I remember going around the table and everyone talking about having some of the same challenges as I was having about how do I get people to understand what I do? How do I get people to buy into what's possible and whatever? And I just, my eyes welled up with tears almost. So I was like, oh my gosh, I'm not the worst. Like, I'm not alone. And that was like the best hour I could have ever, I wish I could have spent that hour with any of those people like 3 months earlier before I thought that I was like the worst ever and totally failing, because we were talking about solutions and all these different ideas and resources. And I traded information with every single person at that table. And there's actually one that I still talk to regularly today. She's incredible. And so anyways, it was being introduced to that community and their willingness to share and mentor in these specific roles that made me feel like this was something that I could potentially conquer. And so I turned on the job at Kraft and decided to stick with it because I loved the challenge and I loved what I was learning. And my mind was just constantly exploding with these like ideas when I would come into these conversations with people internally about like what we could do to help you make that decision in a more informed way. So glad I stuck around. Wow. So I don't know if that completely covers your question, Noah, but that's a little bit of the story.
100%. No, because it gives a little bit more flavor to like when you go now as the president of the DAA, you're now able to see how you're creating environments where people can do that. And I know you also have been able to find that personally, like in one-on-one context, but to actually be more involved in just making it happen for lots of people has got to be really cool. That's really amazing. Okay, so I want to transition into more of a conversation because I have quite a bit to say on this. So I wanted to make sure that we set the rest of this conversation up in a way where we can both be sharing, because I know there's a lot of value out there in terms of opportunities of giving back, the benefits of giving back. So my hope is that all of this is going to become a catalyst for anybody listening to brainstorm ways that they can make their lives, their careers more meaningful by giving back. Right? Just like you had mentioned, I mean, it could have just been a job. You could have just switched jobs, just done something else. But now you found a community, you found mentors, you found friends that you're still in touch with today. And now you're really passionate about your craft. And that there's nothing better than that, right? When you're passionate about the work that you're doing, you'll always be successful at finding opportunities to leverage it in the industry, for clients, for whoever. And one of the best ways to do that is by giving back, by teaching others, by growing in that way. So I want to start with, how can giving back actually be selfish? Meaning we all need a motivation to do it, because sometimes giving back can be hard. It can be work. It can distract from things that are immediately needed in our lives, right? Whenever you take responsibility for something, that's going to happen. So let's start with the benefits of it. What can giving back do for somebody's career? And what has it done for you? When you started actually becoming the mentor and becoming the giver, what have you seen it do for you? What have you seen it do for other people?
Yeah, I think speaking specifically about my involvement with DAA, when I became a chapter leader and more formally cemented my role within how I gave back within the DAA, it definitely gave me access to a different set of context and community than I would have probably otherwise come into contact with. I personally get starstruck to this day when I see some of some of the OGs in our community who have written books and have been around a long time. And so even though the hashtag lobby bar was always an open opportunity, I never joined those conversations at conferences or felt like that was something I could participate in. But now that I was a chapter leader, my cohort or my peers now were some of these people. So whether they liked it or not. So it kind of like let me feel a little bit like I had a place. It was a more formal acknowledgement of like the role that I was in and how I could give back. And so I think access to other people who are like-minded is definitely one of the benefits. And another thing to mention here is it doesn't hurt to have on your LinkedIn profile the formal ways in which you're attached to an industry association of professionals, because that's a signal of your dedication to this function and how passionate you are, that you're willing to take this non-paid job and use your free time to give back to this community so they can be assured of like that you have a large network, right? So if we have some problem internally, when I was an in-house practitioner and we were having issues with, you know, XYZ tool or, you know, this new type of problem, that I had a lot of people that I could reach out to for information should we get roadblocked with our own internal kind of groupthink on the issue. That has opened doors in that way, because it kind of gives credit in a way to the way that you're tethered to an organization.
Yeah, no, I love what you said there about it. It's sort of like backstage access. Like when you take responsibility, all of a sudden you're like responsible for the backstage, but like who's in the backstage? It's all the amazing people. So when you're like helping them do the thing that they want to be doing, so you become part of that crew. But when you're somebody who's like supposed to be, you know, in the audience, so going to the backstage is like, no, off limits. It's not where you're supposed to be.
So
it just changes the dynamic. And one of the things somebody told me once, it was just a really great advice, is that when you want to get close to big people, it doesn't have to be a celebrity. It could be somebody at work. It could be somebody in somebody's community. What you find is, for example, at work, if the CEO has a project that he's looking for help on, and somebody steps up and helps the CEO out or the director out, all of a sudden that person has access to the CEO or director that. And I know so many examples of this that I've seen in my career and others' careers, where when you take on some of the dirty work and the hard jobs, because it just has to get done, nobody wants to do it. But sometimes the best people to take on those jobs are the newest people, because not because they have nothing else to do and they, you know, go get the coffee or whatever. It's really because it gives them access to somebody they would never get to spend time with had they not taken on that job. So the same idea with these communities, it's an amazing thought that all of a sudden you have a place where industry leaders, book writers, all of these different folks that are thought leaders in a space are gathering, and for you to take responsibility in that space gives you access to those people in a way that nobody else is going to have. It's an incredible thought. It's very cool. So let's talk about once you took it on. How did that go at work, both internally inside of the companies that you were working in, taking on these roles, which could take away from your work, but also externally? And what did that look like in terms of recognition? Did you get recognition for the effort? Was it something that they thought was cute? Like, how did they perceive it?
Yeah, I think that one of the benefits of being involved in this community to your organization is, you know, not just when you're interviewing for the role, like I was referring to before, but also for other people to become aware of the positions that are open. So I think that when you have this new community that you're tied to be able to share those job descriptions, that's another pool of people that is a great one to fish from, right? People that you know who are like-minded and really passionate about this industry. So I think that my past organizations definitely liked it for those reasons, that awareness and access to people to potentially publish the job out to. I think that at my last role, because I was in financial services in an investment bank, there wasn't as much enthusiasm around being a public figure within the community and dedicating time to thought leadership, just because it's such a competitive field. We basically had like only 7 other bulge bracket firms that we were competing against, and none of them had digital analytics teams. We were like the first to market. So I think they were pretty concerned about them stealing some of the innovation or try to pull me away from that. So unfortunately, that was like a downside. So I know that a lot of practitioners sometimes struggle to balance between wanting to share with the community things that they've learned, obstacles that they've had, and not wanting to share, you know, the secret sauce or their company, being concerned they'll get poached. So it's a delicate balance. But now that I'm over here at Search Discovery, it's one of the things that is expected of me. And so it's actually a little bit easier for me to participate in some of those ways, because some of those benefits back to the organization, some of those challenges aren't there, basically.
It's really fascinating to think of it from that perspective, that, you know, not everybody is going to get recognition at their company for these types of things. I know when I was doing some other things early in my career, and I did get the like, oh, that's really cute that you're doing that. Like it was, but at one point when I started teaching at General Assembly, all of a sudden I completely overnight flipped on its head a lot of folks' perception of me, both internally and externally, internally at the company and externally. All of a sudden they're like, what? You have enough information to teach this stuff? Like they were like, what? Where did that come from? We didn't, you know, it's just a fascinating thing. And I felt the shift in my career at that moment when I took on the responsibility to, like, after a day's work, to go out at night into the community and teach a class or speak to people who are mostly pivoting to a new industry or had just joined a team, didn't know what they were doing, and they needed like the 101s, right? So that was a fascinating experience to watch, because they weren't judging the quality of my material, right? They didn't have nobody was coming to the classes. They literally just saw, oh, somebody wants you to actually speak on this topic. All of a sudden it was like, boom, totally changed things. It was really fascinating, because I was like thinking, this is a really great method for getting, again, as you said, that's what I think is most fascinating about what you said. It depends on the environment that you're in. But in some environments, you might not think of this as an opportunity to excel in your career, but by doing it, you might actually get the attention internally or the differentiation from, you know, the dozens of other people that aren't doing that, that might help you grow in that area of your career or take on responsibility or become a manager, because they can see that you can work with people well.
Totally. And I think that common complaint on the practitioner side is, you know, as soon as a third party agency consultancy comes in, they say some of the same things you've been saying all along, but now that someone from the outside said it, now everyone's bought in all the way up to the top. So I'm curious, did you kind of feel like you were able to wear both hats in that scenario? Because you were internal, but now also people acknowledged you as this outside entity, this kind of thought leader in this space. Were you able to wear both hats at the same time? That's genius.
Yeah, I mean, look, like you said, being in Search Discovery, it was a little bit easier because I was employee number 16. So it wasn't like there wasn't a huge curve to, there wasn't a lot of challenge there. But I do think there's definitely a balance. I think the biggest balance wasn't even on that side. It was more on my own ambition and quality of life. Like at a certain point, which I'm sure you can speak to, at a certain point you take on too much outside and it can impact not really the work as much, because that's usually easier to balance, although it can be challenging, but it definitely can eat into like any personal time you have. Because I at one point I remember I had like 6 classes I could teach and they could be every week. And then it was like, okay, this isn't possible. So like I literally started, I actually had a bunch of other folks who I coached through taking over the classes one by one. And eventually I moved out of the country, so I had to completely stop. So I tried to replace myself as much as possible, which was a weird experience. but yeah, no, it's definitely a challenge. What's your experience been in terms of doing the same thing?
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting experience when two weeks ago, I spoke at a conference, and instead of, because it was slightly outside of digital analytics, was more of actually a data science and broader analytics focus than just like what we've come to know as the Digital Analytics Association or DAA content. And they wanted to include me on the agenda and the speaker page and all that information as the president of the DAA, not director of optimization at Search Discovery, because that didn't resonate as much as this role. So I think that that's what they were kind of identifying, like, we want to give you credibility as a speaker, and it's not going to be with your title. And I was like, okay, well, good. I'm glad we have something that you think will work. But I think that that title, because of my involvement with the community, definitely gives some credibility to some of the work that I do. So I know that that's out there.
For sure. So speaking of that, what about the experience speaking and teaching? I mean, you came not from a career of speaking and teaching. It sounds like you came through the expertise in the field. So at what point did you start to get out there on stage and, you know, start teaching? What has that done for your skills in that area?
So I'll tell you two stories. One is when I was first asked to speak, it was eMetrics in 2014. The previous year, I had been a runner-up for the Rising Star Award from the Digital Analytics Association, which is what presented me with the first opportunity to speak at eMetrics in Boston. And when I first got the call from Jim Stern, I'm like, I'm sorry, I think you have the wrong phone number. Like, there's absolutely nothing that I have worth sharing on stage. Like, I'm 2 years into my career and, like, yeah, like, I'm super jazzed and I love what I do, but, like, no way could I hold a candle to some of the people that I've seen speak on stage. But it was half a dare from my therapist at the time that I was trying to work through some of my personal anxiety issues, as well as when I called back Jim Stern to be like, yeah, so, like, what do you want me to talk about, though, that got me on stage? Because Jim just said, well, what are you most passionate about? Like, what projects do you currently have on your plate that really you jazz? And I was like, well, we just implemented Optimizely on our site about 4 or 5 months ago. And so we're standing up a program, and I've actually put so much other work on my plate on hold because this is it. This is my jam. Like, I'm really loving it. He's like, great. Well, that's your talk. So just send me a summary. And I was like, oh my gosh, Jim Stern. So it was totally a push. And just connecting again, like, what am I passionate about, and finding a place to connect. And it was also scheduled to be 2 weeks before my wedding. So that was a little intense as well. But I got on stage and talked about some of the challenges of building a program in-house at a large matrix organization. I think that a lot of times when people talk about testing and optimization, they're thinking about green button, red button, or, you know, reaching statistical significance, but there's actually so much work in building the program and the foundations and getting the culture to adopt what you're about to do, which is sometimes pointing to people and saying, that's not right for this page or this opportunity. And so, yeah, it was my first time, and I definitely was like sweating bullets, especially because I went into the speaker's room to check in before the conference, and the only person sitting there was Tim Wilson, who I have looked up to since day one. And I was like, oh my gosh, you have to take this opportunity. Finally go up and talk to Tim Wilson. I had to, like, coach myself in the corner just to go up to say hi. And I was like, hi, I'm going to be mentioning your idea of the hypothesis library in my talk. Thank you so much for your impact on my career. And he's like, oh, well, then I'll come. And I was like, no, don't come. And he said, which was wonderful because he asked great questions, but he sat in the front row, which definitely was like, we could contribute half of the sweating down the back to presenting to Tim Wilson about how to build an optimization program from the ground up. But that was wow. Like my first experience with it. And it was totally a dare, and it was totally a test because I didn't feel like I owned anything that anyone would want to hear. I ended up having like a line of people to talk to after my talk, which was one of the most incredible experiences of my life to date, is having other people say that something that I said made an impact on them, or that they were going to do something different tomorrow in their job because of what I said, because I had experienced wow. That so many times myself. And so to think that I could be on the other side of that was a really incredible moment. And I'll never forget that feeling.
Wow. So that actually leads into the next question I have for you. It's fun knowing some of the other people in the stories, but one of my teachers and mentors once taught me this idea that if your life feels stagnant, that's a natural thing when a person's not moving, they're not getting things done, and they're not taking things on. And that the number one way, if you feel stagnant in a career or in your life, that it's sort of monotonous, or it's like you've kind of fallen into a mechanical way of doing things, is to take on the burden of somebody else. because if you all of a sudden have a passion and care about other people, you'll find that all of their challenges and different situations, it's always going to be new. Your life can get boring because you're in it. But when you take on those burdens of other people, you start to all of a sudden see opportunities to help other people, to lift them up, to challenge them, right? Or it just awakens you to kind of like the excitement that life is. So you've already mentioned that in passing a little bit. Also, just to mention, I know Tim Wilson, I actually had a friend of mine who decided to go from having an MSW and working in that world to go into data analytics. And she already has two kids. She was like very nervous about the decision. And I actually had asked Tim to help me figure out what the right thing is. And he's like, oh, you know what? Why don't I just mentor her? I was like, what? Like, you have no time for anything. But he's like, he's an incredible person in that way. But I think he probably sees that same thing, that when you take on the burden of somebody else, you're mentoring somebody, like it makes life a lot more exciting. So what's your experience been with that personally, in terms of working with others, giving back, in terms of what it's done for you?
Yeah, and I completely agree. That's a great way to summarize it. I was really nervous when things were going so well at the American Medical Association that I was given headcount, because I had always been the doer, the analyst. And since I was like self-taught and just figuring things out, the documentation was my own. And I was worried that I was going to not be good at kind of like letting go, or that I was going to be some like control freak micromanager and people were going to quit within a year. But I actually found, similar to what you were just describing, that I pulled people actually in that were outside of digital analytics, people that were super jazzed to move into it. Because I was hiring more for someone who was passionate about this, that obviously has to know how to respect data. Like, but beyond that, like the hard skills, we can teach it. I mean, I was proof of it. It was more about someone who was really excited and jazzed. And so it was incredibly rewarding to see my team flourish. And I loved creating opportunities to have them present to senior management and seeing it go from like, but how does XYZ process lead to this type of data? And then how does it lead to insight? And how do we package it to get other people on board? I get a lot of joy out of that. And so that was incredible. And so I actually found out that I actually really do like managing people, because I love watching the process of someone else get to experience what's so incredible about this job. And to me, that sitting across from someone who doesn't like working with data, or who is maybe afraid of it, or doesn't really understand, you know, to the same degree what we can do with it. And all of a sudden there's this moment where it clicks and they get this like sparkle in their eye and they're like, oh my gosh, this is how I'm going to do my job better, faster. I'm going to make this decision more informed. And like that little sparkle in the eye moment is like my motivator. And so watching other people getting to create the sparkle is just as incredible as doing it myself. So I could not agree with your sentiment more.
Amazing. That's awesome. I love the way you described and painted that. I'll share one thing. People that work closely with me, and I don't think you've experienced this yet, but maybe you have, but I have like the biggest passion I have in teaching other people and mentoring other people is, it's not always like fun, I don't think, for them, but I really enjoy like really horrible situations. And it's because like I used to hate them. I used to have a lot of anxiety around these like terrible client situations or conflict. And then one day I realized, like, I think somebody said that, you know, it's not like anybody's gonna die, right? And then I woke up to like, oh wait, you're right. We're not doctors. Like, this is, it's gonna be okay. And I thought about it and I was like, look, if I can breathe and step back, all of a sudden I can actually see the opportunity in a bad situation. Because if you think about it, when everything's going great and you do great work, it's really boring. Nobody's ever excited about that. But when things are horrible and you make them better, it's really exciting. Totally. So whenever something's really horrible, like, it puts a really big smile on my face, because I'm like, wait, this is great. This is the biggest opportunity you could have. Like, this is when you double down and find in the darkness, like, whatever light you can to like illuminate it, right? And I've personally found that like when another person gets that all of a sudden a couple of years in, because they've had enough clients where they're like, you know, weathered a little bit and they've been through enough situations to realize like, okay, this is normal. This is going to happen. That when they get to the same realization that like, wait, if there's a really bad situation and I succeed here and I take the risk, it's going to be awesome. So they get excited about it. That's like one of my favorite moments. It's a very unnatural thing that you only get through that learning curve.
Totally. I'm from Chicago. And so the Rahm Emanuel quote of like, never waste a good crisis or never let a good crisis go to waste. I try to use that as my packaging for like, we're going to get through this and we're going to come out on the other end the right way.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. Okay. So I want to touch on a couple of things. Number one is, there are a lot of different ways to give. So we've talked a little bit about mentoring and teaching and a little bit about speaking and the opportunities to like build those skills up. What are some other ways that you found to be meaningful? Because you mentioned a couple of them already, just different ways to give back that you've found to be rewarding for yourself.
I think there's obviously the easy one to think about is donating money to different causes that you align yourself to. That's another formal way. But I think that there's like, even though there's a lot of formal roles as like a mentor or a manager, if you're training up new people, I think that there's like a lot of like small moments to capitalize on. And I actually think if I were to go back and chart the most meaningful moments in my career, they haven't always come out of some big formal initiative, but it's that moment where I remember one of the first moments I got connected with someone really senior when I was in market research. We had these like printed tabs, like cross tabs for these questionnaires. And there was an issue in the waiting for all of these 72 divisions. And I was staying late on a Thursday night. One of the VPs from a different team walked by and was like, what's going on? And I was like, I'm checking all these waits. I have like paper all over the floor. And she was like, well, let's see if we can figure this out. And she just like sits down and starts working with me. And I realized that this is like for a client. And this is like, you know, a very formal project that we're putting on, but she didn't have to stop and she didn't have to like help me through that. Not only did she help me get through the problem that I was experiencing in that moment, but she also like modeled the behavior of like, how do you roll up your sleeves and like help a colleague in need? And just having her presence there and knowing that like, I have someone who's super smart, who's been through like, you know, messed up weights in the past, gave me the confidence to like get through that moment. And so I think that there's like a lot of like little micro opportunities to show up for your colleagues and your coworkers and other people in the community. I think that those are really special moments too. So it might not always be, I'm formally your mentor. There's a lot of places to contribute in a way outside of what's in your job description necessarily.
I love that. And really, because you mentioned donating money, and really there, not everybody can be in the position of donating money, or it doesn't make sense sometimes because it's just not a cause. The cause that you're passionate about might not need money at that point. It needs other things. And what you just mentioned is your time. Time is actually like, I find to be even more precious than donating money, because you know, you can go and you can donate money so that the school can build a playground, or you can go and like roll up your sleeves and build the playground, show the kids how to play on it. You know what I'm saying? Like that's a totally different and much more meaningful way to give, and that everybody can be involved in. And like you just said, staying an extra 30 minutes late when you're not the mentor, you're not the teacher, right? Just to help somebody out is a huge way of volunteering. That's donating your time. And people, you know, some people take their time lightly, but as you get further along in life, it's like very clear that time is a very precious resource. And to take an extra 30 minutes and give it to somebody is one of the like most amazing ways to give. That's something I find to be incredible to see, when somebody will be willing to take an hour out of their week to help somebody out.
Totally. And that's why you're a podcast host, Noah, because you just very eloquently summarized what I could not put into words. But yeah, totally agree. Totally agree.
I appreciate it. I'll leave that one in there. speaking of which, by the way, that the podcast itself is an interesting experience, because of all the things that I did, I don't know that anybody that leads our company or other areas has listened to the podcast itself, but I know that it's made a big impact on their perception of me and in tangible ways that I can measure. there's been a significant difference just starting a podcast, especially one that's focused on giving back to the industry and giving back to people, has made a huge difference to just how people perceive me as a human being. Like, I was doing the same thing before the podcast as I'm doing now. But number one, the fact that I'm a podcast host and that people actually listen to this thing helps. But number two is it also put me in a position, like you mentioned before, with the backstage access pass, right? Where, you know, I can sit down with somebody who is willing to talk to me because I have a podcast, that if I just called them and said, hey, can I schmooze with you for an hour? They'd be like, why? Like, why? You know what I'm saying? So like, totally. Even if nothing else, I get the access, which is an incredible thing. It's like, it's really, I've gotten a lot out of being able to do this myself.
Well, that's actually one of the things I was curious about. What is the most meaningful giving back that you do, or what brings you the most joy? Is it the podcast? I mean,
no.
Or is it, does it change?
No, my giving back, I think it's totally outside of my career now. And I do talk about it on the podcast because I cover my wife's business, but it's really like working on her work is probably the most meaningful, because I started this podcast, as anybody who's been listening knows, just to prove to her that like an idiot can do a podcast and they'll be fine. And it took off a little bit. So I've kept it up because it's been really rewarding, but her podcast blew up. It's still, I mean, she crossed like 30,000 downloads in like less than a year. And it's well past that. I don't even know what the numbers are anymore. And what's crazy is, and the reason we like double down and I spend like my nights working on it, is that we'll get back, she works with newlyweds, and we'll get back messages of like, hey, I was, you know, 6 months in and considering divorce, but I listened to your podcast or I took your course or whatever it is. And like, now we're good. And I was like, we can now do nothing else. Like, this is an obligation we have to do. Like, this is what we are meant to be doing. And that's probably the most rewarding, is it's, we have no idea who's listening, but we're getting these, you know, little tidbits of like lives that are being changed by it. And it's just incredible. So I think that is one area. The other area is a funny one to talk about on the podcast, but I've actually like somehow gotten into the role of speaking in local communities about like the challenges of modern media and digital technology on families, on individuals, on focus. And I'm actually speaking on over here in Israel on the topic. And it's like, it's a really, you know, we're building these technologies that are incredible and they can do a lot of great things, but they're also terrifying in what they do for the human mind and how much they're optimized to take our attention away from like our lives and onto something else, and how powerful that is. But most of society is not aware of it. So I think, you know, given that we're on the in, speaking on that topic is also a big passion of mine. And I think I get a lot of reward out of doing it because it feels like, you know, the right thing to do, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. And because you're on the inside, you can demystify some of the uses of that, right? That's like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Or like even get to like, what's the actual problem? Meaning sometimes people want to demonize everything. It's like, well, that's not going to work because now everybody knows that it's not that bad. But if you say like, no, there's some great stuff, but like, here's what is bad and how bad it is, like, and here's what we actually have to do about that so that we can enjoy this. And then all of a sudden it's, you know, a lot more meaningful conversation. But yeah, 100%. Okay, fine. So lastly, if somebody was listening to this and they are hearing like, wow, this is really amazing, I want to be able to give back, but maybe they're in a similar position to what you are in, where and maybe they haven't already volunteered, they haven't gotten to a place where people are giving them opportunities to speak on a stage for the first time. But if somebody wanted to start in the direction of mentoring or teaching, do you have any stories to share that could help with what that process might look like?
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing that I've learned is that you're probably able to be a mentor on a topic much earlier than you think you are, and that there's always going to be an opportunity, or a subject area rather, where you could be a mentor in at the same time as something you can be a mentee in. the Digital Analytics Association actually has a mentoring platform that's sponsored by the women analytics community. And currently I'm registered in there as a mentor for some technical things around optimization or leadership. I'm actually going to get connected with Corey Underwood as my mentor for some technical side of things, because we all know that he's an expert in that. Be open-minded to those opportunities, and remember that there's no better way to master a skill than to be a mentor in it. I was with John Pastana, who's the co-founder of Omniture, now Adobe Analytics, earlier this week, and he told a story that the first time he went to Web Club at his college, that he offered to train the entire class on HTML, and he had no idea how to do it. And so he put that out there as a goal so that he could spend an entire week teaching himself everything he needed to know for the class, teach it, and then the next week spent on the next lesson. So it was there as like an accountability milestone. And that's kind of an extreme example, because John's an extreme kind of guy. But I love that idea of like, you don't need to be this like, you know, black belt master in order to impart knowledge on someone else who's especially entering this field. You probably have more to share and teach than you think.
Yeah. And I can definitely second that in terms of, it's amazing to see once you get into the teaching world, how little teachers sometimes know and how much they learn from the teaching itself, and like where that's where all the learning's happening, because all of a sudden they know they're going to be accountable to answer questions, and then they're like, whoa, now I need to know like twice as much as I needed to know before. Yeah, 100%. And I can definitely also second the Women in Analytics mentoring program is an amazing program. I participated in it as well, and I haven't in a while, but I was working with somebody. It was just an incredible experience, but it's also just a great setup. The fact that you give folks a lot of direction and how to go about the relationship and not just kind of connect people and say, go. So that's a really great option for people if they want to check it out. If somebody did want to check that out, where would they go?
The Digital Analytics Association website, under the communities, you'll see Women in Analytics and the mentoring platform.
Amazing. And do you have to be a woman to be a mentor?
You don't have to be a woman to be a mentor. The way that the relationship is structured is that there just has to be a woman on either side of the relationship. So a woman can be the mentor or the mentee.
Amazing. Perfect. Awesome. Okay. So lastly, I just wanted to ask you, because you're so involved in the industry, at this point, what do you think is most needed in our industry that anyone in it could help make happen?
So something I've been thinking a lot about lately, especially as this one in analytics community has grown and flourished over the past couple years, is not wasting your platform. That we can like raise all boats. So I might not be a man, but I am still white, straight, and cis. So that comes with a heck of a lot of privilege. And so it's really on me to think about ways that I can raise and support other marginalized groups with this training, the idea of training and mentoring. And it's not just those one-to-one relationships, it's also being prolific there and thinking about how do we hire and build out teams and what ways we can support each other. Because obviously there's a lot of different perspectives and people that are coming at our industry as it's growing. And so just thinking about what we can do to support everyone and make it everyone feel included.
Okay. Well, this is such an enjoyable conversation. Thank you, Valerie, for joining. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
Wow, how powerful. Let's recap. The goal of this episode was to inspire all of us to look for ways to give back that are around us. Valerie, who had a lot of models for giving back as she grew up, described how much pleasure she gets out of helping people break through hurdles that she was particularly familiar with. Like the example of diving from the deck without losing her goggles, she described that it was addicting. Early in her career, she shared challenges of bringing up real analytical results when looking to answer market research questions due to the lack of desire for accountability. That's an experience many of us are all too familiar with, but it made her feel alone and isolated and questioning if she even wanted to stay on this career path. That was until she found herself at a conference at a table of folks with the same issues. That ability to share a common experience changed her life literally. Later, when she formalized her role at the Digital Analytics Association, It gave her a new level of access to valuable contacts in the industry. She described how one of the best ideas for newbies in our space is to take on roles and responsibility that give you exposure to great people. We also described how doing that can help a person gain recognition both internally and externally in your organization, and how my teaching and speaking and Valerie's leadership roles have done that for our careers. She remembered thinking, "They were going to do something different tomorrow because of something I said," which was an incredible moment for Valerie as she spoke at a conference. We also talked about how taking responsibility for others can inject excitement and newness into an otherwise monotonous career. And finally, we talked about ways to start mentoring. Knowing you're probably able to mentor on a topic much earlier than you think you are, to find the subject areas you're most passionate about, that there's no better way to master a skill than to mentor in it, and to check out the DAA Women in Analytics community. I'm so thankful to all of you for helping to spread the word and story about yet another incredible person in our industry. There's more where this came from, and if you're enjoying these stories, the best way to say thanks is to subscribe, share with friends, and go into iTunes and rate us 5 stars. You can follow me at Noah Omri Levin on LinkedIn and Instagram. This is Digital Marketing Life.